Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. What is up? How's it going? I'm doing very well. I hope you are too. And we've got a great show, so let's get with it. At 22 years of age, due to pressure, uncertainty, and not knowing what else to do, my guest got a real job as a corporate civil engineer. It was during this time that he was introduced to the potential of selling on Amazon. And in 2013, he made his first sale. From there, he kept working evening, nights, and weekends building his Amazon business. 1 year later, he had started selling nearly 36 products, and he'd replaced his corporate salary. It was this business that led him to create a simple Google Chrome extension to help Amazon sellers. This simple solution has now been developed into Jungle Scout, a full suite of tools for Amazon sellers. And what began as a side project has grown into a 60-person team with offices in both Vancouver and Austin. Now, let's hack Greg Mercer. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by 2020. It's where creative minds get authentic, real-world stock photos. So if you're looking to tell a real story through your brand, through your business, through your blog, and if you're looking to deliver an honest message to your audience via social media, then the photos that you use, they matter. They matter more than you might even think. 2020 has crowdsourced millions of photos from a community of over 350,000 photographers, and they're all available under a simple, royalty-free license. The best part of all of this is, today they're offering you, Hack the Entrepreneur listener, 5 photos absolutely free. To get your photos right now, go to 2020.com/hack. That's the word 20, then 20.com/hack to get 5 free photos right now. Are you ready to grow your audience and increase conversions with automated emails that feel personal to your subscribers? Marketing automation, it can be hard to wrap your brain around, but with ConvertKit, it's easy. ConvertKit is email marketing features created for creators. ConvertKit, their features were built by creators for creators, so they know, because they've been in your shoes, what it takes to grow a successful online business. Plus, they're going to help you get there. You've heard a ton about marketing automation. You've heard a ton about ConvertKit. Now's the time to try, because you're going to get 1 month absolutely free if you go to hacktheentrepreneur.com/convert. Any plan that you wish, you get 30 days absolutely free by starting today at hacktheentrepreneur.com/convert. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Greg, welcome to the show.
John, thanks for having me on the show. I'm excited to chat with you.
Oh man, yeah, this is gonna be fun. I've been looking forward to this conversation. So let's jump into it.
All right,
Greg, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
So, you know, looking back, I think like the earlier days of entrepreneurship are like the hardest, and I think like the one thing that's kind of contributed to my success so far is just the ability to just like make things happen, you know, like not take no for an answer. Don't let all of like the roadblocks and struggles and kind of like emotional feelings kind of like get you down, but instead just like really just like push through to make things happen. So I'd say between that and the ability to continuously like learn and teach yourself new things when you need to figure something out, you know, I think like those two characteristics are the most important for an entrepreneur to have and have been the biggest effect on my success.
So the ability to continuously learn what you need to learn and to make things happen probably go hand in hand.
I agree. You're absolutely right. Because, you know, just like you said, in order to make those things happen, bust through those walls, oftentimes, you know, you'll get hung up on, well, crap, I don't, you know, let's say the very early stages, I don't know how to interview people to hire my first person, or I don't know how to do this or that. So I agree. Just the ability to Google it and figure it out, or find the podcast or the YouTubes, or call a mentor or someone else that's been through that. I think that's what it takes.
How does that process, the ability to learn anything that you need, how does that process, or how do you see that process? Like, as the CEO, as the leader of this company that's growing rapidly, I'm sure you're venturing into territory you've never been in on an hourly basis, and probably trying to stay ahead of it so it doesn't sort of run you over. How do you sort of, I guess, keep finding out what it is you're going to need to know, or just not getting overwhelmed with it?
Yeah. You know, maybe I'm not the greatest at like proactively figuring out what I think I'm going to need to know in the future. Instead, it's pretty much stuff that jumps up and hits me every day. Like, oh, crap, this, you know, this just came up. I'm not quite sure what to do about that. Let me do a little research. Let me call someone kind of like in my mentorship circles who maybe has been through that before and ask them this question, or those types of things. So I'd say it's really not like going out to try to figure out what I think I need to know. It's more so stuff that comes, fires that come out at me that I need to put out.
So it comes at you this morning, and then it's like, okay, I gotta find somebody who's already done this before and see how they do it.
Yeah, sometimes it's as simple as just like a Google search, you know, some good content on the web. Other times it's a little bit more complicated, or maybe not like easily described, maybe more complex things like the kind of like the company culture. It's like, okay, well, I'm just starting to get this feeling that this is starting to happen, you know? So that's, I think that's a good example when I try to talk to someone. If it's something simple like Stripe disputes, like people disputing their credit cards, you know, we just kind of ran into a little bit of an issue with that. So that's more so like, okay, let's do some research here and figure out. We know other people have solved this problem before.
Fair enough. Okay. And what are these mentorship circles that you talk about? Is this like, is this something you've set up like concretely, or is it sort of just loosely friends and people you've met?
The latter. So these are just people that I've connected with, kind of like, you know, now they're in my networks, but they're all at a similar stage, like in their business life is what I am. So most of these people that I would call on, they also have SaaS companies of similar size. They're going through a lot of like the similar type issues. So I'd say those are the majority of them. And then there's a couple other people who I'd say are kind of like older, more experienced, who may now might be like retired, but I still like really look up to as a just kind of like a great book of wisdom or what have you. So these aren't any like formal, like paid masterminds or anything like that, but more so just like connections that I've formed over the years.
You out there hustling within the industry gets you to meet cool people also doing cool stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, it's like one of those things that's like, I don't really like go to these conferences to be like, okay, like, you know, I'm looking to meet people. It's more so, I think, like kind of like organically formed. It's like, wow, me and that person really hit it off because we're at the same stage. We kind of like exchange some ideas. It's like, dang, I need to be doing that. And they kind of think similarly. And then it just kind of turns into this relationship that we feel like we can both call on each other to ask questions.
Yeah. And then having that ability to continuously learn means that you are sort of coachable in the fact that you will listen. Not only just listen, like, because there's a lot of people who will ask for an opinion or advice and then not listen to it at all, which yeah. makes it frustrating for the person giving advice. But I'm assuming that you do. I mean, obviously, if you feel something's wrong, you have to just, it's your business. You have to make the call. But I'm assuming you have that coachability aspect to you, which then propels you forward even further.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think everyone would say that I'm always the first to admit that I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm just flying by the seat of my pants. But I'm just getting through and just like sheer willingness to like learn and improve and like always do better every day.
So before we go too far into what you're up to today, let's kind of go back if we can, Greg, because I know going through it, it doesn't always make sense. But looking back, there sometimes is like defining moments where you sort of realize that you were either just not cut out to be an employee for somebody, or you had this calling to sort of make something big difference in the world. So can you kind of take us back through your life and sort of pinpoint where that point was, where you diverged into entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. So I went to college to be a civil engineer. My whole life I've actually had like this entrepreneurial spirit. You know, my mom has like pictures of me when I was like 11 years old, like selling painted acorns or whatever else. So like that's always been kind of like in me my whole life, but I didn't know what I wanted do, you know, like at the end of high school, I went to college, as most Americans are encouraged to do, to be a civil engineer. I got that degree. I got a corporate job working in that particular field. And within like 2 months, I was like, this sucks. You know, like I'm doing all this like crap work that I don't enjoy doing. I'm not passionate about this field. Like I got to get out of here. So that's when I started just trying to learn everything I could about like how to start my own business. And the first one that I originally did, and I still have this business today, is selling physical products on Amazon. And that's kind of how I got my start with all of this. So I was able to grow that big business large enough that it was making more money than my engineering job. At that point, my wife gave me the thumbs up to quit my job and just, you know, take my business full time. And that was kind of like really like the turning point in my life for me, because, you know, I ran that Amazon business for a year or two. Then I started Jungle Scout, which is the software platform that I spend most of my time on today. Yeah, that's kind of really like the turning point, like starting that job and then quitting my corporate job. I think that's when I really saw like this different trajectory on my life.
So I think there's people listening that are, if they're not civil engineers, there's some other type of engineer, and they would obviously love to sort of follow this trajectory, but they're probably also thinking like, holy man, I work a lot already. So, and then there's people who have nothing else to do except run and start a business, and that's a ton of work. How do you possibly manage to do both consecutively?
Yeah, totally. It is a hard thing, right? So for one, I'll be completely honest. Hopefully my former employer is not listening to this, but I would like slack off at work really bad. So I'd spend like half of my days at work working on my own business. So that's helpful. I guess if you're not tightly managed and you don't mind doing a poor job at work.
Fair enough.
So that was one way. The other way, and again, like this looking back, I don't know how I did this, but you know, so I'd work, I'd get home from work like 6 o'clock. I usually eat dinner with my wife, and then I would typically, so I'd spend like 30 minutes or an hour with her. And then I usually go to Starbucks, like crush this huge coffee. And I'd usually be up until like 1 or 2 a.m. working at Starbucks on my own business. And then I don't have to wake up at like 6 a.m. the next morning to go to work again. Looking back on that, I don't know how I did that without like dying. But I mean, that's really what I did for like the better part of a year to like make my own business happen. So everyone has the time for it. It's just kind of like how you prioritize your life, right? You know, are you hanging out with your friends on the weekend, or is it more important you to like get your business off the ground? Are you staying up working late, or is it more important to you to get like the 8 hours of sleep? So that's kind of how I thought about it.
That's kind of, yeah, that's such a similar answer that I think so many of us had to go through at one point, but it's hard for a lot of people to get their head around. But it really does take that.
Right.
So your evenings, your nights, your weekends for the better part of a year, side by side with a full-time job that you got to slack off and obviously keep like a marriage going happily. That's just sort of what it takes. And the very first business you started was this Jumpsend?
No. So the very first business I started was selling physical products on Amazon. So I was ordering products from factories in China. I was putting my brand on them and I was selling them through the Amazon FBA platform. So that was the very first business that I started. So I was a full, you know, after I quit my job, I was a full-time Amazon seller for a good period of time before I saw the need in the software space. So that's when I originally launched Jungle Scout, which is a product research tool for Amazon sellers. It locates profitable opportunities for Amazon sellers. And then we actually later on went on to launch three other tools, including Jumpsend, Fetcher, and Splitly. And these are all a similar target market. They're all for Amazon sellers. So now we have four tools, a suite of tools to help Amazon sellers in their day-to-day business do everything from find new products to launch those products on Amazon, to do the profit analytics, listing optimization, split testing, all those types of things.
So then you'd quit your engineering job, you had a full-time FBA physical products business, you saw an opportunity to scratch your own itch, probably seeing the market sort of blowing up in Amazon sales, and you saw an opportunity. So then did you keep your physical product business then running as you started a completely new business?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that was what was essentially bankrolling the new business. So, you know, my physical products business was doing well. It was putting out like a good bit of cash. So I started reinvesting a lot of that into this new business and the software business. Yeah, but that was like my first time getting into software. I'm not a developer. I didn't really know what I was doing. Thought it would be about 1/10 of the price to build these software tools is what they actually end up being. And these are all kind of things I learned along the way.
Always. So it was kind of like It was too easy. You're just running one business and this isn't good enough. I need to now run and start another one on the side. You just probably missed all that extra work.
Yeah, I couldn't find enough work in the physical products business, I guess. I don't know.
Did you have a team with the physical products business?
I did. So that made a big difference, right? So let's see. I think when I started the software, there were maybe three people working for the physical products business. So that did, of course, allow me to, you know, devote some of my time towards the other business while they could do a really good job like maintaining that business. It probably wasn't the right group of people to like help it like to continue to grow, at least at the same trajectory as it was. But they could at least, you know, like maintain it on a day-to-day basis. It wouldn't fall apart or anything even if I wasn't working on it for a few weeks.
But none of those people were sort of like crossed over to work on both businesses as they were starting?
No, they weren't. I kept them focused just on the physical products business. I hired a developer to build Jungle Scout, which is the first software tool. And then between the developer and myself, that's how we launched the first software product.
And I think I read somewhere in my research that Jungle Scout started as a simple Chrome extension.
It did. And looking back, this was one of like the best decisions that I ever made. And I didn't realize it at the time because Chrome extensions are relatively easy to build, especially compared to like typical SaaS application, you know, like a web application. And the other good thing about it is I was just charging a one-time fee up front. So it was like $100 or $200 one-time fee. And of course, you don't get the recurring commission from that or the recurring revenue from that. But, you know, I didn't realize at the time, I had no idea how to price it. So, I mean, this was just like blindly. But the nice thing about like collecting like $200 up front is like right away, you know, you get that cash into your bank and you can use that to help you grow. Whereas if you're selling a SaaS application for, let's say, you know, like $20 a month or $40 a month, now it takes like 10 months or 5 months to get that cash. And for like a young, especially software company, it's just really important to get cash up front. So that was like one of the best decisions that I've ever made that I didn't realize at the time. And as a result of that, I think that's the reason I never had to take on any funding.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense because you're right. Like, over the lifetime value of your customer, you would make more money month by month, but you don't get it all up front to kind of keep funding you.
Yeah, exactly.
And also, like the idea of the simplicity of a Chrome extension, like it's not only expensive and takes a lot of time to build out a full SaaS platform, but to actually get it so that it's ready and without people ever getting to use it before, it's this huge, massive sort of platform. And then people are like, this is not what I needed. That's why I loved it. It's like, it's such an evolutionary sort of iterative process with people out there paying you to use it and then also getting feedback to build the SaaS out from there.
Yeah, totally.
So you were just much smarter than you figured even.
there was probably some luck involved in there, but.
So how did you get those first customers to pay you $100 or $200 one-time payment?
Yeah, so I built kind of like an MVP version of this and it only took like, I think 8 weeks to build. So that's very good for an MVP product, but it was very rough around the edges. It did work though, and it did provide a few pieces of really valuable information to Amazon sellers, including like how many unit sales are being sold for any product on Amazon. So it was like really valuable for everyone. So after having like the MVP built, I just created like a little screencast of like me using it. And I started to share it in just some like the communities online that I was already pretty active in. So these were like Facebook groups or another forum. And that's kind of a little bit of a spammy thing to do. But I think the reason like I kind of got away with it is just because like I was already very active in these communities. They knew who I was. I was helping people out. You know, I was like responding to their questions. I was kind of like well known. It's like I was just, so then I just started posting these little videos of like, hey, what do you guys think about this software I'm building? Do you have any feedback for me? Are you interested in learning more? If so, and then I just took them to a squeeze page. And from that, I think I collected like a few hundred email addresses within like the first week. And then that was my launch list. So, you know, once it was ready, then I just sent an email out to, I think it was actually only like 150 email addresses, but like 10% of those people converted. And for me, that was like great, great validation that there is a market for a tool like this. And that was kind of like the feedback I needed from people. Like people were voting with their credit cards or with their wallets, right? And that's what I needed to like continue to build this and continue to refine it.
And then did you continue sort of for the next bit to like market it in that sense, like in a hands-on, in forums, in Facebook pages?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I continued to do that. From there, I also started reaching out to kind of like influencers in that particular space or people that taught like FBA type courses. And, you know, I would hook them up with like a free version of it, a free license to it. I just said, hey, like, let me know your feedback. Is this helpful? If it is, if you think this could like help with your training, I'd be happy to do like a free demo for your class. Yeah, that's kind of just what it took in the early days, is just manually reaching out to people, trying to get it in front of their audiences. Yeah, that was, you know, for the first few months, that's pretty much like the sole kind of like marketing channel that I used.
As they say, I guess, doing things that don't scale.
Yeah.
Things that you couldn't continually do to this day.
But right.
At the beginning, that's sometimes just what it takes to get rolling.
Absolutely. And then from that, of course, then you're getting all this real feedback from the customers. I thought that they wanted this, but in reality, all the customers were telling me they wanted that instead. So, you know, then that's what got built into the product. Just talking to all those people is what you collect like really valuable feedback from in the early days. So you know what roadmap to kind of take this product on. So yeah, that was, especially in the early days, you have to do things, I think, that don't scale.
And now, is it 2 years later?
A little over 3 years, 3 years and a few months.
A little over 3 years. So it's from just you and a developer to fairly well built out team at this point. How many people are on the team?
Yeah, so there's about 60 people on the team. About half the company is remote and the other half split up between, we have an Austin office and a Vancouver office.
And how does that change the way you're acquiring customers today?
Yeah, so it looks much different. No longer are we just hustling in Facebook groups. So really all of our marketing today is really built around our content. So we have a really good content engine. Most of, you know, a lot of people in the space think of us as kind of like, maybe you could probably even say like the foremost thought leader. Like we're always running experiments on Amazon. We're doing case studies where we're launching products and transparently showing like how they do. So we're really like collecting a lot of like the data and the science and trials and everything else on Amazon that a lot of other people aren't doing. And of course, we're blogging about this. We're doing YouTubes about this. And then that's really the content that we're now driving traffic to. So of course, some of that ranks organically in Google, but we're also doing paid ads on pretty much all the different platforms. So yeah, really our content marketing is like the core of how we're acquiring customers.
So talking projects, Greg, projects is a loose term, but say it's a new customer acquisition project or a new on the product side. Maybe take one that you've sort of worked on recently, but with a team, half remote, half in office, two different offices in two different countries, how do you right now, as I guess as the founder, as the CEO leading this team, how do you go about deciding that a new project is worth not only yours, but your team's time, energy, and resources?
And so this is probably something that I'd say I struggle with quite a bit. I have a bad tendency, as I think probably a lot of entrepreneurs do, to like take on too many projects. If you couldn't tell by the fact that we've launched multiple different SaaS platforms and my own Amazon business and everything else, I'm trying to get a lot better about like saying no to things. I wouldn't say I'm great at it yet, but I'm on the path there. So yeah, I have gotten a little bit better. I guess now how I'm always thinking about it is, okay, like that sounds really fun to do that project, but we already have some proven products that work well. We already have proven marketing channels. Does it make sense, you know, to expand into this one new marketing channel, or should we just put more effort into the marketing channels that have already been proven? So I wouldn't say I have like down the road, what I strive to be is like much more like analytical about collecting numbers and data and everything else to try to put like a number of whether or not we think it's going to be worth it to take on this project or this new marketing channel or whatever else. But to be completely honest with you right now, it's a lot of just kind of gut feelings.
Fair enough. And so with the product side, because you are somebody who has, I mean, you have three products around this one, I believe, right? So those ideas come from somewhere. Like are those generated by current customers, or just are you constantly in the market trying to figure it out yourself, as you did with Jungle Scout, which was like kind of your own itch? You're like, this needs to be solved. Or do you have a way of taking the feedback?
Yeah. So today we're much, much more customer focused on letting the customers drive how we like evolve our applications. So our product managers, one of their goals, they have to do interviews with at least 10 customers every single week. So this is typically like a Zoom call with a screen share. At minimal, it's like a phone call. And they're just talking to them always about like, hey, what are you looking for? What's changing? Can you try to perform this action for me? What would happen if I asked you to do this particular thing? And then they kind of watch how they're doing it. And that's really how we make all product decisions now. And that's, I'm a big believer in that. I would encourage everyone listening to this to do it the same. I think a lot of people get hung up always thinking that like more features are always better, or I'll just build something similar to like that with more features, but it does that. And in reality, once you start talking to customers, you realize like more features is rarely the answer. Typically, it's just like they want something that's like easier to use or solves this one particular pain point a little bit better. It's not always that you just need to like bolt on more stuff.
That's true. That's a hard thing for software companies, I think, to realize. It's just,
yeah,
let's just
totally.
Keep adding more features. It's like, well, that's not really what I wanted. Just solve this one you're trying to do already.
Right. A lot of times it's just like improving some of the things you have, or you need to always be thinking about, okay, like when people are signing up for this product, like what pain points do they have? And are we solving all of those? So a lot of times it's as simple as things like just like better onboarding or better education. It's what I've found over the years is it's rarely like that they want more features bolted on.
True. So if it's something like, say, better onboarding, and you've just as a company, as a team, sort of realized that that's the issue, it probably means that there's somebody not hyper-focused in onboarding at that point. Would you then look to hire somebody with onboarding? Would you hire a consultant or a coach to come in? How would you sort of take on this new area of the business?
Yeah, so kind of like at our scale now, we have much more like specialized positions. So it's kind of going to depend, but no one likes that answer. So let's scrap that answer. So typically for us now, it is hiring a new person to be laser focused on that. If this is like a major company initiative that lots of our customers are asking us for, typically that means for us at this scale, like this size, that we're adding someone new to our team that's very specialized and has lots of experience with that one particular thing. So that's kind of like much more different than the early days when you're like a 10 person team, when you have lots of just like generalists, right? Lots of just a full stack marketer, full stack developers, everything else. Whereas now, like the scale we're getting to, there's people who are experts in very specialized niches. So something like that would be a great example of like customer education or customer onboarding. You know, there's people who have worked at other like big companies and they've done lots of testing around this, and that's what they've been working on the past 5 years is successfully onboarding their customers. So those are usually like the types of people that we're hiring now.
Nice. And team of about 60 between two offices and remote, where does that place you as the CEO, like on an ongoing basis working out of?
Yeah. So really actually for the past 3 years up until January of this year, 2018, my wife and I were full-time like digital nomads. So in 3 years, we went to like 30 or 40 different countries. We literally just lived somewhere for about a month and then moved to like a new country or a new city. And we do really like that lifestyle. We were getting a little bit anxious to have like a little bit of a home base. So I do have an apartment in Austin now. I'll be spending probably 6 or 8 months of 2018 in Austin. I'll probably spend 2 or 3 months in Vancouver. And then my wife and I still plan on traveling like a few months this year. So I don't know exactly where we'll be living, but summers in Austin, I hear, get way too hot. So it sounds like a great time to maybe spend a little time in Europe or somewhere else.
Nice. So yeah, you get to sort of float between the offices and then also just nomadically because half your team is still nomadic.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're not all nomadic, but probably some of them are.
Yeah, there's a few nomads on the team.
Excellent. All right, Craig, this has been an absolute blast. I do want to wrap up on one final question, if I can, for you. It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap, which seems to be this gap sometimes that we live in as entrepreneurs, as dreamers. We're always projecting our personal successes into the future, meaning that no matter what we really tend to accomplish right now, it's always like, well, when I hit that metric or when I get to stand on that stage, whatever it happens to be, we think that our success is there, but we know that as soon as you hit that, there's bigger ones into the future. So rather than looking forward right now, Greg, I would love it if you could turn and look behind you. I mean, since painting acorns to becoming a civil engineer, realizing that you did not want to do that, and now creating multiple successful businesses. Can you tell me how you feel about this whole journey, the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses up until today?
Man, I was laughing so hard when you're describing that in my head, because that's like exactly me. I have these milestones. I'm like, man, I would be so happy or whatever else. Like once I hit that milestone, but it's always, and then you hit it, it's like, whoa, no, it's way higher than that. So that's so true. I'm the most guilty one of all of that. But yeah, I mean, I couldn't be more happier about kind of like the success and really just the whole journey, you know, because it's not only successes. There's been a lot of low points and like really tough times too, but I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. I can't imagine like going back to one of those corporate jobs and not running this business. So really just like looking back over a relatively short period of time, we're talking about just a few years here. They've really been like the most fun years of my life. And it's great getting to do shows like the Hack the Entrepreneur with you, John, because it, you know, it's a time that we as entrepreneurs can take out of our busy days to kind of reflect on this journey that we've had and kind of like all the fun associated with it. So yeah, it's been amazing.
Awesome. Awesome, man. That's what I like to hear. So like, and I know because I've talked to over 400 people on the show, and I know that we tend to fall into that group of pushing forward always, but it takes us to where we are. So we've talked about Jungle Scout throughout this conversation, Greg. Could you now specifically tell the listener who it's for, what it can do for them, and where to track it down online?
Yeah, so Jungle Scout is a product research tool specifically built for Amazon sellers. So if you're looking to sell something on Amazon, or you're looking to scale up your business on Amazon with more products, Jungle Scout is a tool that you use to locate these product opportunities or locate these niches. So you can sign up for it, you know, with having no idea of what you want to sell on Amazon or like what good opportunities would be. And Jungle Scout will show you those opportunities so you can figure out, hey, I wanted to get started on Amazon. I've heard about my friends doing it. They seem to be having success with it. I just don't know what to sell. Then Jungle Scout solves that problem for you.
This is probably how your friends are finding out what to sell.
Yes.
By using Jungle Scout.
It probably is.
So junglescout.com is the website. Greg's also quite active over on LinkedIn and sometimes on Twitter. So I will link to those as well in the show notes for you. Greg, thanks so much, man, for stopping by and for sharing so openly with us. I really, truly do appreciate it. And I don't know, man, just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome to watch.
John, thanks again for having me on. If you guys are listening to this, you know, I'm on iTunes right now. John has over 400 shows of awesome episodes, but how do you not have more reviews, John? I'm going to solicit some reviews for you here. If you guys are listening to this, you need to head over to iTunes and leave a review because this is an amazing show. There's been a ton of really valuable episodes and we need to get the review count up.
There we go. There we go. Best call to action ever, Greg. Sure. Thank you very much, man.
Take care.
And here we are at everyone's favorite part of the show. The part where we get to go back through the conversation with Greg and find that one thing that he said. Are you ready to do this? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
You know, I didn't realize at the time I had no idea how to price it. So, I mean, this was just like blindly. But the nice thing about like collecting like $200 up front is like right away, you know, you get that cash into your bank and you can use that to help you grow. Whereas if you're selling a SaaS application for, let's say, you know, like $20 a month or $40 a month, now it takes like 10 months or 5 months to get that cash. And for like a young, especially software company, it's just really important to get cash up front.
And that's the hack. Greg. I love this. This is how you've now built out Jungle Scout from a simple Chrome extension. So for your browser, there's extensions, if you don't know, or you probably do know, that there's extensions that do different various things. And it's a simple, simple piece of software to make. So there's kind of a couple things here that Greg goes over. First of all, it's the idea of starting with a Chrome extension because it's easy and you can kind of test the water, see if people will actually pay for it. Then he moves on to the next part, which is lots of us have the issue of maybe not having a lot of money to put into this to get going. So he sells it rather than as a SaaS or like as a recurring monthly thing. He sells it up front for $200, which he says he just makes up that price, but it sounds good. He can get people to pay him and he can use that money to then build out the full piece of software, right? So maybe in the long term, he makes less money per customer, but it allows him to do or it enables him to build the products that he needs to build. This is so key, right? There aren't excuses anymore to not do the things. If you have an idea of something that you think could be fixed, a problem that could be fixed with a Chrome extension, make it and then sell it for an upfront cost. Right? Greg didn't know that this, he didn't know how to price it. He didn't know that he just did it. And he says it turned out to be the best decision ever in his life, but he didn't know it at the time. But he did make a decision and he did take action on it. Greg, thank you so very much. All right. That was a lot of fun. I thank you so much for stopping by again. There's a lot of podcasts out there, but it's cool that you stopped by and hung out with Greg and I today. We really do appreciate it. If you have a chance at all and you're on iTunes or Spotify or something, head over there, leave a rating and review. It helps the show so very, very, very much. And I would really, really greatly appreciate it. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the site. Head over there. Make sure you're on the email list. That's where the good stuff is coming to. And yeah, it's been fun. I'll talk to you again next episode. All right. Until then, keep hacking the entrepreneur.